stakeholders and members of the public. So the brunt of today's work is to engage the department for their responses to input made to the public hearing. So 30 minutes, as soon as you are ready, we may commence.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members and to all of the colleagues who are present. To be honest, we hadn't quite anticipated starting like this. We had understood that the committee would table a report on the hearing. But we have prepared, but we've not circulated or printed out the document. So, advisedly, because we wanted to hear first of all what the committee would say, and then, you know, on the basis of that, prepare a response. But if that's not the case, if it's all right, we will methodically go through the bill from start to end, not looking at every clause, but looking at the issues that arose in the public hearing and that we figured out as being important. So that's what we're prepared to do at this point.
I've noted you just before you. I've spoken to the committee clerk, the content advisor of the committee associated with the office. So the report from the committee is still working from that. And then unfortunately I have also not been around. So I don't know if you spoke to
Mr. Chairman, you're on that point.
Would you kindly wait? I just moved you.
Okay,
so, from our side, I'll see how far we can get to finalize the practice meeting. But the way forward that you suggest is helpful. At least it gives us a starting point, and members can also come in. Your opportunity.
Yeah, sorry for jumping to the council, Mr. Chairman. I didn't realize we were still talking. I hope you were done. On the point of process, I think it's some clarity before the big committee starts. At the conclusion of the public interest, the hearing, I approached the Deputy Minister, and I think we agreed on the proposal that I made. In the course of the hearing, it was clear that on a number of issues raised, there was kind of agreement or buying in from the department or from the minister by saying it's a good point or we can certainly look at that and that kind of comments. And I think it would help us a lot in terms of making progress if the minister or the department could indicate from the beginning and maybe by saying these points are taken and these points are accepted or whatever, and then we don't have to have debate on something where it's already kind of agreement. So I just want to ask about that.
The standard practice that we have been watching the committee, where there's concurrence in regards to a number of issues that emanate from stakeholders, the public, this process deals exactly with that. This is why it's important for the department to say that we have heard this, this is where we agree, and this is where we don't agree. So we'll be covered in the process that we're embarking on now from the moment.
Maybe in the course of it we can see whether it would be useful. I know it would be useful, but we also obviously don't want to necessarily hand out publicly at this point the documents. There are some issues where we're fairly clear, where we're doing what the Honourable Day is suggesting, is clearly states what we've that we're fixed. Like this is, let's say, or proposed amendment that has come from the public hearing. As a result of the discussion in the committee in the course of the public hearing. We can do that, but the document we've got also is a document which indicates areas where we are proposing to think through an issue, but we obviously do so under the guidance of the committee, because it's not in our hands, it's in your hands as we continue to understand. So that's why we didn't want to, at this point, table publicly a document. I mean, we can talk to a document, but let's proceed, let's see how that works. That's all I could do, Chair.
Stick to your document.
Okay.
And then in the project, members will obviously comment, and we as the portfolio committee will articulate our views and draw this together before we come to close across the promotion.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you, Chair, gentlemen. Thanks. And welcome, by the way, to what Honourable Dreher said as the conclusion of the public hearing. We welcome that. But in subsequent discussion with the Chair, we understood that there would be this intermediate step where there'd be a continual report. So okay, we understand that there are good reasons why. So the first issue we want to talk to is the preamble. So we'll try to go methodically, but as I said, not clause by clause at this stage, but like sequentially, where we think there are issues. This in response to, in particular, an issue that was raised by the South African Institute of Race Relations, like also a number of other inputs, I think following the input from the South African Institute of Race Relations. And you remember that part of what the institute was saying, Chairperson, was that they felt that we think it was already, but they felt that the bill was not allowing access to courts on any matter other than compensation.
Okay.
And we pointed out that Section 34 of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution especially talks about access to rights, and that no piece of legislation can undermine that principle of constitution, obviously. And when we had dealt with the state law advisors and senior counsel, it said it's not necessary, therefore, to refer to things that are in the Constitution, which are, you know, taken as read, as it were, in any piece of legislation. However, it might not make for elegant drafting, but we think that in order to overcome the impression that we are trying to cut out any challenge in terms of the process of an expropriation process, that what we should include in the preamble is drafting along these lines, and we'll make the text available. But it would go something like this: whereas Section 34 of the Constitution provides that everyone has the right to have any dispute that can be resolved by the application of law decided in a fair public hearing before a court, or where appropriate, another independent and impartial tribunal or court. So we have a direct reference in the preamble, and then we will also suggest later on in board, I forget, which is clause 21 of the bill, that we'll have a similar reference specifically to Section 34 of the Constitution. So the legal experts don't like this, so I think it's contrary, but we think in the public interest in this case, just to make very clear that our intentions are, we think we've a lot of year in that direction, so we're strongly proposing that we make clear that Section 34 doesn't disappear in the case of an expropriation. Okay, so that was your first issue that we raised. I don't know if you want us to stop and discuss, or if, as it were, at this point. Okay. We then move on to definitions. Okay. And I won't raise the issue. There were a number of the legal resources then, for instance, wanted definitions of compensation, community, and so on, which, as members will recall, we are sympathetic with what they were raising, but we think that they are narrowly focusing on land reform and land restitution issues, and in a more general application, it would be inappropriate to overdefine. So we're sympathetic that we've decided that we won't go with what they're suggesting there. However, under definitions, the POA in particular, South African Property Owners Association, has some useful and important minor amendments to the definition, of course. And we've accepted those. Specifically, you'll remember that under the definition of high court, they propose that we should add within whose areas of jurisdiction the property is situated. Okay, and that we thought that was an important decision there to make sure that there shouldn't be forum shopping by, of course, forum shopping by ministers who think they've got a friendly court somewhere else and expropriate property and in the compensation area or whatever, take it to a high court outside of the jurisdiction of where the property is located. Okay. So that was an important addition. And after much debate, the Fire and Property Owners Association also said that magistrates court, the experience that they've had in numerous expropriation cases, is that magistrates court really don't have the capacity to deal with complicated expropriation and compensation related to repetition, move the reference and just keep it at high court would be the appropriate decision, the land court, which is what a high court. Our intention in including magistrates courts and up to 300,000 amounts, up to 300,000 to make it accessible for small amounts of expropriation. But we've held that one, the court roles in magistrates courts are extended as well, and therefore the notion that this would make it accessible and available. We also had in mind cost issues in terms of taking cases which community would get to a magistrate court at a high court. And that's why when we come later, we will see that what we've done is that we've taken the advice of the committee, which we agreed on, to look at alternative dispute mechanisms, and also for the appropriate authority to initiate any compensation court adjudication in order to as much as possible remove the burden on citizens who are being expropriated. So in short, so that the longest thing, that in short what we've got probably under definition is that we specify high courts within whose area of jurisdiction, areas of jurisdiction often situated, that we have that, and we remove the reference to magistrates. Okay.
You want us to wait right until the end, or can we ask questions as we go along? Maybe easier now while we're dealing on specific points.
Yes, that's the issue you want.
On the court, matter of course, thank you to the Deputy Minister, but there was a request or a proposal, I can't remember exactly who, whether it was Deborah Wenzel or Legal Resource Center, one of them or both, who proposed the Land Claims Court should be used as the jurisdiction. I want to ask whether the Minister has looked at that and what his response to that would be, to that proposal.
Okay. Honourable Sultani, followed by Honourable Sikola and Honourable Mayor Matthias. Yes,
thank you, sir. As much as I can quite recall, we said, institution it was that suggested the institutions like tribunals. I would like to know why the department would not be kind to that kind of alternative, because we think some of us were quite taken up by that suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and the Deputy Minister, and honourable members. Chair, I'm trying sorry to get a clarity from the Deputy Minister. When you talk about it, now it means that they finally will be the constitutional court. They are not now considering the magistrate court. I'm trying to check about the court to go to high court and the constitutional court if you don't use the magistrate court, because that's the magistrate court are not persuaded and then they are closer to the community. How does that going to work? Because we need to actually to think about those who are vulnerable, those who are very poor, and because most of them are them that are going to be affected.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I said remember this cabinet, because the Deputy Minister did explain that the magistrates are cheaper, more accessible for this process. But at the end of the day, when you wrap up it all, we are removing the magistrate court and we are left with the high court. So I thought we should give people more options so that we can have the high court, we can still have the magistrate,
or those who can be necessary cost vendor to be used because it will be reasonable for their financial interest.
Thank you. I think what we should bear in mind, members, is where we started this morning. The department is articulating its views on the input. It's not the final view. The final view will come from what the portfolio committee decides. So let us engage in this process, to articulate, and also point out where we feel strongly in regard to certain issues. So we are noting this. So by the time we come to summarize our own input for the clause-by-clause process, our views have been tested and refined by this exercise. You'll ask for a little bit of check.
I'm going to observe people. I can just say for the sake. No, I'm not just yeah, and but I think that is part of the problem, Jesus, that if we had a document in front of us, it would have been better for receiving something now to see where the changes are. But I understand. Let's hear what the department says, and then we can continue.
If I can, it presumably because obviously you're not making firm decisions at the source part from outside, or well, decisions on your hands now, not how we are making proposals. But if I can just deal with the issues that have come up. First of all, the land claims court is a high court, is our court, so it would be covered. And clearly, that it would be the sole court in which an expropriation, because expropriation is simply for many purposes and not just for a land claim issue. So, in terms of the tribunal issue, we hope to cover it in a proposal around alternative dispute mechanisms, which we'll come to later. For the moment, we're just defining what it means in the bill by courts. Okay. That's not to say that other forms of dispute mechanisms should not be allowed and permitted or recognized within the bill. On the magistrate's court issue, we originally had in the definition and in the bill of conduct view, on the grounds that members have articulated, and that I was also articulating, are obviously magistrates' courts in principle are cheaper to access, are more local, and in terms of legislation that covers them, they could only hear cases up to 300,000 rand. Okay, so they have that limitation, but that might be appropriate in small local cases. We were advised by senior counsel, basically, that has been very active in the space, that, and Andre will assist me, that historically, in the 1975 Act, magistrates' courts, I think, were involved, and eventually, the subject disaster that was removed, basically, they didn't have the context and have the skills to deal with compensation issues. Secondly, the idea of access, as we were saying, and again on advice from a practitioner involved in these cases, was that the court holds no less. So we've tried to overcome the potential complication of costs, particularly to poor communities or whatever that might challenge a compensation issue, which we certainly have the right to do so. One, through the alternative dispute mechanism possibility, and secondly, through the requirement that if at the end of the process of expropriation, there's no agreement on compensation, that the state must proactively take matter to court. So it wouldn't have to be initiated. So we've had to overcome that, but that's your decision. We're not supposed in principle to include in the definition of court, magistrate's court, but those are the reasons why we are now proposing on that side to remove it. So just if the committee members would weigh up. And perhaps if you have access to lawyers or others who have some experience in the area, it would be useful to share what the experience is. So that's the definition of court and how we propose it to handle it.
Just a second, that's what we're saying. Parliamentary legal advisor. want to say something in regards to the issue of magistrates, because the same applies to the state where I saw that the past this issue and have an idea for members as to which direction you go.
Morning, Chair Person. My view would be, as the committee has indicated, that people should have given an option of approaching the magistrate court, but obviously the major issue is the issue of cost. And my experience with respect of the magistrate court is, in respect of our gatekeeping, that is the access of the court, is easier for lower end of the market. So if that option is open, then the person is allowed to either approach the high court or the magistrate court. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, I agree with my colleague, Chair, that the jurisdiction of the court will determine what a case could be.
Perfect, Bonda, I don't see. Thank you.
Proceeding then, okay. The quite a lot of the input in terms of on the definitions. Banking Association, South African Institute of Race Relations, South African Institute of Value, etc., all wanted greater precision when it came to defining property, which in the current definition, all we say, and we're taking it straight out of the property clause in the Bill of Rights, property is not listed in land, it means it's a right to such property. That's the current definition. For the very sectoral reasons, different sectoral submissions wanted things to be defined in or out of the definition of property. Our approach in this matter is to say this is a general law application. And we want it to be a general law application that has an enduring, it's got an enduring guidance to expropriation. And we don't want to get into the complicated area of defining what constitutes property and what doesn't. So we're simply guided by the Constitution in this matter. And what we've done is we I think this is the document we have discussed. What we've pointed out is that in a variety of specific pieces of legislation in which expropriation is allowed to this or that national minister, we've not listed provincial cases or municipal cases that they exist as well. We point out how either explicitly or implicitly for the purposes of the particular minister, property is acquired, either explicitly or implicitly. So in the text of the Forest Act 1984, property is defined as land purchase or spray property for forestry. The subsection does not necessarily have to be treed, but and so on. So the definition, so a minister would have to follow, once we pass this, once we pass this bill, that will offer general guidance, but any minister could not expropriate property outside of the definition of the specific piece of legislation that allows them to expropriate. Okay. And that's how we, rather than try ourselves to cover all different cases of property, and the definition of property is a moon target as well, and an age of electronic IT property, etc. So that's a long thing, but in short, what we're saying is that we're holding to what we're saying. Let's just keep it as a very general definition for the purposes of this law of general application.
Thank you, Jay. If I understand the definition, so you keep the definition as it is. Okay. And say, so how would you then define that, taking two stuff right in such property? How do you see that right in such property?
What we understand is there are different levels of ownership or different degrees of ownership. So in the case of a certitude, basically ESCOM, the father would still have ownership of
that stretch of land, but there would be a use right in that property, which may or not have been expropriated. But so the expropriation is not a full ownership expropriation, but a form of ownership, a partial ownership, a use right. So that's what we understand by right. That would be one example of what we would understand by right in property. Now, what has come up from SOPOA in particular is that they feel that that doesn't sufficiently cover land and the example that I've just used of right in land, in the case of the example that we're giving. So we'll come back to the committee because we're asking the state law advisors is whether property is not limited to land but would include a right in such a property, whether that's sufficient to cover the land issue, or whether we should follow the advice of the POA and also specifically refer direct also to a right in such landed property. That might be trusting getting into too much detail at this point in the absence of a draft, but just to indicate to the committee that we've asked the state law advisor to assist us to see whether we need to be additionally more specific in regard to rights in land and property in the case of the services. Okay, we're still with submissions.
Thank you, Jake. Can I ask the Deputy Minister, if we look into that, I think it was the South African Surveyors Association, and they highlighted quite a lot of real problems, especially when it comes to these sort of rights. If they can also just look into that matters as well,
please. We'll come to that when we get into the body of the legislation. We'll come to look at some of what they had to say. Okay, the next definition which came up, AgriSA, Southern Geomatics Institute and others, were not happy with public interest. So colleagues will note that it defines public interest. We've simply taken the public interest definition that you'll find in the Constitution. The public interest includes the nation's commitment to land reform and to reforms to bring about equitable access to all South Africa's natural resources. And then we've added, and other related reforms in order to redress the results of past racial discriminatory laws or practices. Okay, so it's an addition. That addition is not outside of the Constitution because if you go down to subsection 8 of the property clause, clause 25 in the Constitution, it goes on to say, no provision of this section of the property clause may impede the state from taking legislative and other measures to achieve land, water, and related reform, and then it uses the words that we are using in our definition in order to redress the results of past racial discrimination. Okay. So we feel that anyone that has problems with the way in which we're defining public interest has problems with the Constitution and not with our bill. Okay. And that's their problem and not our problem. So that's how we handle that issue. But again, the committee.
Question to the Deputy Minister. I actually made a note here on my draft form that the Minister indicated in during the submissions and discussion that they could drop that additional part, the last part, and other related, because that was a problem to some, and he said you were prepared to drop that.
You may, yes, we think we can, but we'd be very interested to hear if there are any political parties in Parliament that think that we should drop that further reference to the Bill of Rights. So we prefer to have it in. We don't think it dramatically changes the bill. So, I mean, it's not shipwreck if that happens, but we'd be surprised if we had any political parties, to be quite honest. We would have a problem with that addition.
Honourable Matthias.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. To me, I don't see it having any problem because indeed this law or this act specifically it wants to address the or redress those things that happened in the past. Therefore, by adding this, I don't see anything wrong with it. It is actually meant to do that also.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Kunabai.
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I don't have my constitution with me, but if you look at that subsection 8, it goes further. It says, provided that any departure from the provisions of the session in accordance with section 36.1. I don't know what 36.1 says, so shouldn't we do that then also to make it complete? But it's,
basically, the 6.1 says that the rights, the Bill of Rights, may be limited only in terms of law general application. So I think we think that would be an unnecessary cluttering up. But okay, anyway, we're tailing our commitment to sustaining it, but again, it would be for the committee to, when we come to the decision making, to have it available in the Constitution to.
Thank you, Chair. I quickly scanned through the section and the Freedom Front last but referred to include that as well. Then we have the whole complete clause.
Okay, belt and braces. Chris Banda and the Panic. Thank you, Minister.
There were some issues which were raised by, for instance, the South African Geomatics Institute, as I think we will experience, wanted to introduce a whole lot of very specific issues, which are specific to the issues, definitions of sketch plan and so on, which we on a bias feel that it's unnecessary. We're now moving beyond definitions. Those are the specific ways in which we've addressed either accommodated what we think of have been useful amendments to definitions, or where we try to explain why it is that we've heard what that parties have said, but we felt that we're happy with what we've got for the moment. Can we move on then to Chapter 2, which deals with the powers of the Minister of Public Works to expropriate health care. Now, this is a section which we've conceded has caused a lot of unnecessary misunderstandings. And specifically one's referring to clause 3.1.A, okay, which says that the minister, meaning the Minister of Public Works, may, subject to the obligation to pay compensation which is just and equitable, expropriate property for a purpose connected with the execution of his or her mandate or upon request by an organ of state. Now, I suppose, first of all, the first problem, which we, in an earlier draft, was that because we began with this chapter dealing with the specific powers of the Minister of Public Works in regard to expropriation, one common misreading is that the whole bill was about giving the powers to one minister, and we've been at great pains, I think, to explain that that's not the case, and so on. So I think the committee are familiar with that. However, this particular clause 3.1.A, we're agreeing, could give the impression that any organ of state could request the Minister of Public Works to expropriate on its behalf in areas which have very little to do with the competency and legal mandate of the Minister of Public Works. Okay. That wasn't the intention, but that's our, some have chosen to interpret it, and we agree that it's open to that misinterpretation, which we want to avoid. So on this one, we've asked the Chief State Law Advisor to assist us with wording, which essentially makes it clear that the minister can expropriate, as can other ministers, on behalf of an organ of state, provided that the expropriated property is relevant to the mandate, encompassed within the specific mandate of the Minister of Public Works. So we've asked for assistance to just get drafting, but that's what we intend to do. But we've taken the point. It was raised very strongly by Weber Wenzel, the young lawyer from Weber Wenzel. And the race relations have also raised this point. I mean, we agree that it's open to ambiguity. That's the way we would talk to the state law advisor. Okay. And we've also got counsel assisting us as well. So we've asked, we don't want to do amateur issues. We know what we need to do, and we're certainly taking advice of the public hearing. Just to make it very quick book here. It's not difficult. I mean, it should be difficult, but we just need to make sure that it's done with the, you know, with legal professionalism. And you wouldn't want to trust the deputy if it's trying to do that. Oh, that's a bad idea as well, but okay. Chairperson. Okay, we're going to jump over to clauses, to clause 6 basically, 1, sub 1, sub 2, C and 4. And this came from the, particularly from the South African Geomatics Institute. And I won't read their long proposal in this matter. But specifically under 6.4, what we're saying in 6.4 is, in the event of the municipal manager failing to respond to a request contemplated in subsection 1 within the period contemplated in subsection 3, it shall be deemed that the purpose for which the property is being acquired would have no effect on existing and future engineering services, infrastructure and housing and town planning.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. We're now jumping to clause 6 from definitions. As the Minister, no comment on 2, 3, 4, 5, because there were a lot of comments from the public in public inputs on these sections. But he's now jumping to 6. I just want to clarify, are they not going to make any comments on those other things?
So we've dealt with 3, powers of the Minister, public works. Okay, and we think that a lot of the comments that followed, particularly from the Institute of Regulations, under Chapter 2, were relating to that misunderstanding, and we think if we clarify that aspect, as we're proposing, under 3.1a, that some of the other... Okay. There was an issue, but maybe we can discuss it when we come to it, because there was a 4.1 issue around... and some which I haven't picked up at this point. But maybe when we come to clause by clause, we can help in.
Thank you, sir. So this is a matter of process. Do we proceed on the understanding that where the department does not offer any comment, regardless of the fact that if certain institution or institutions have expressed concerns about a particular section, where the department does not express itself, it leaves it with us to decide how to deal with those comments, and that they will not come back. Or, when we think as a committee, and we say we feel that we must take into account comment by some person institution, and accordingly suggest that the bill should be amended, they will have a right to say, no, we don't agree. So I just want to be clear on the process that we're going to follow, and I think it's important, following on what Honorable Clare, you know, has suggested. We assume that they've got nothing to offer. We want to say they have concerns, but nothing to offer in response to comments made on a given section. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Sultani, it's not my understanding, they speak for themselves, that they do not have comment on the other clauses preceding six. But they are saying that in regard to certain of them, they've asked for legal refinement from the state law advisor. So it does not mean they have nothing to say in regard to that. The process that we are following is that after public hearings, the department is given the opportunity to express their views, a rejoinder on the engagement, the input of stakeholders and the public. Then we interact as a portfolio committee with those issues. But ultimately, it's the decision of the portfolio committee as to what will end up in the bill. Earlier on, by way of example, the pros and cons of including the magistrate's court was articulated. And it was felt because of the denseness of court rules at all levels. It might be a challenge for a magistrate's court. But my judgment of the general feeling of the committee is that we should include magistrate's court. So then we will get to a process where, after the department has articulated its views, we go clause by clause. There was somebody else who had hand up before Honorable Grunewald, Mematiel, and then Honorable Grunewald.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I thought also the Deputy Minister was saying the ones that he did not comment on, and we have some comments on them. When we come back dealing with this close by close, then they can be addressed. That's what I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You said it quite clearly, Chairperson, that you must remember that the bill is now with the committee, and it's for the committee to make a decision. It's not necessarily that we have to take a decision that suits the department. The committee takes its own decisions now. That's why we are legislators. Thanks.
Honorable
Sultani,
I think the question
That's exactly the point. And that's why we said we would have helped that the committee would have tabled perhaps a collective view on the core issues. And we are following Honourable Gaya's request that it could help for us to give you a sense of how we're reacting. But it's in your hands, the commission, not in our hands. And we don't exercise the veto on that. We might try to do it through the ANC, but that's a different matter. But we would never dream of doing that, of course. Can we proceed? but it's in your hands, absolutely. And we are simply here to try and facilitate and explain and give an indication of our thinking as a result of the very fruitful processes that we've had sent to the committee and its public hearings. Okay.
Well, Honourable Sultani, all I can assure you is that members on the floor of the committee are from various political parties. It's only the chairperson. We have no political party where it's proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I have a political party. I said that. Well, I have two, but that's another matter. Okay, I'm scoring ungirl here, so let me put it. Okay, so we're on clause six, basically. So we've gone through that, Honourable Grace, right? There's nothing in between that and the previous one we've dealt with. And essentially it's a small matter, but which we think was usefully raised by the SA Geomatics Institute. And it's basically about the requesting a municipal manager to respond to indicate whether a particular expropriation or intended expropriation will impact on the integrated development plan or whatever of the municipality. And what's been pointed out to us is that any expropriation will obviously impact. So we should reword it, and we will seek advice as to whether this is precisely the right word. But let me read, we will just add a word like adverse. So let me read 6, subsection 4. In the event of the municipal manager failing to respond to a request contemplated in subsection 1 within the period contemplated in subsection 3, it shall be deemed that the purpose for which the property being acquired will have no adverse effect. So we're adding adverse on existing and future engineering services, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Just to make that point. Because otherwise it's redundant. Clearly, anything's going to impact one way or another, even if it's minimally. But what one's looking to see whether this kind of expropriation is out. Because we need to follow the schedules of the Constitution, which says certain things are within the competence of municipalities, so you can't just go expropriate as a national minister and, you know, without proper consultation in a way that could have a serious adverse impact on the planning processes which are scheduled at a municipal level. So that's what we're trying to do. So introducing something like adverse, but we'll get parliamentary law advisor advice as to whether adverse word is a better word, but I would like that.
Chairman, could I raise the Deputy Minister through you? Thank you. I agree with what he said there, so I don't have a problem with that proposed amendment there. But I want to point out the municipal manager failing to respond. I think we have to be realistic. This is kind of talking about an ideal world or ideal circumstances. But with a lot of local municipalities actually failing, you are very likely to get municipal managers who are not going to respond by neglect or for whatever reason, incompetence, neglect or whatever. And then you have no information while it could have potentially devastating impact on municipal infrastructure, you know, water lines or electrical or any other municipal infrastructure. So we must think, how do you find your way around it if the municipal manager fails to respond? But there's actually very important information that you need to be aware of before you expropriate. How do we get around that? It's just to be realistic.
I think that's a relevant point for all of us to exercise our minds. Yes, so we also have to think about how we can circumvent a problem of that nature. So what I'm saying is that we need to flag it. If we have ideas as to how to deal with it, let us come up with it.
I don't really understand it, because I mean, that's why we have subsection 4. If a municipal manager does not respond, it says, failing to respond, then it is being deemed. So if we have a poor municipal manager and he or she doesn't respond in time, that's why we have a sub clause. So I don't really...
thank you. Honourable Dre, you wanted a further point of clarity from...
No, I'm just trying to start having that one-on-one here with my colleague here. You know, if a municipal manager fails to respond, we can't, it says it would be deemed that there is no effect, but we can't assume that.
because municipal managers aren't always up to scratch. So they fail to respond for other reasons, due to incompetence or neglect or any other reason. But because there's no response, we can't assume that there's no effect. There may potentially be devastating effects. So that's my problem. I just wanted to clarify that because I got the impression you didn't quite understand what I said.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think people are, there's obviously, I mean, obviously not every problem usable in municipalities can be solved through legislation. Okay, so bearing that in mind, but however, under clause 5, am I right? Clause 5, but turn back a couple of pages, sub 4, okay, there's quite a lot of onus on the expropriating authority to carry out effective investigations, and presumably, if it's not an entirely dysfunctional municipality, and there aren't any in South Africa, if it's not an entirely, there will be an IDP and other things which would be a matter of public interest. And so, if it can be shown that the expropriating authority did not have the trouble, and the onus in terms of clause 5, subsection 4, is that they must carry out effective investigation. So it can be shown that it was the municipal manager was asleep or something, but in fact it was a failure, then obviously there's all recourse, a degree of recourse and things like. But let's look at this, but at the same time we can't solve all problems through a general law of application. I think we need to be realistic about that.
I would also like the legal advisors to come in wherever you feel that you want to make a comment. I would like you to articulate what you wanted to say. Earlier when I saw you looked a bit puzzled, wanted to say something, so I'm giving you the opportunity. I read faces.
No, yes, thank you. No, that's exactly clause 5, 4D, C, that will obviate that we would look at wording, but it is already onus to make sure that that the zoning and all these municipal things are taken into account.
Thank you, sir. You saw in Craig Water, let's race.
I heard Brayton Bradbuck once referred to this as Kamerad's Stool. Which is its anti-Kamerad school. I'm still with clause, we're with clause 7, sub 4A. Okay. Here's a small thing, but a useful thing which was pointed out here by the poem. So remember, we at this point we're dealing with an intention to expropriate, okay, not yet the notice of expropriation. And under 7.4a, it says that the party that will be, that might be expropriated, because it's sort of a declaration of intention, but should indicate the amount claimed by him or her as just an equitable compensation, furnishing all full particulars as to how the amount is to be made up. And we think it would be useful on the suggestion of Sophia to add, the amount claimed by him or her as just an equitable compensation, should he or she be expropriated, because it's still a should, it's not a definitive, as a result of the interaction at this stage between the parties, the decision may be not, or as a result of other issues, the result might be not to proceed. So it's a small technicality, just to make the point that compensation is not guaranteed. I mean, expropriation is not guaranteed at this point.
that has done.
Thank you, sir. That's a friendly question to the deputy minister. Given the last sentence of that 740, full particulars of how the amount is made up, I imagine a process by the owner for potential property, where one would need perhaps services of an external party would come to do evaluation of the property. Isn't it too short a period of 30 days? So take into account the fact that you don't have so many people who have got the expertise and qualification to give a qualified evaluation. I have a feeling that maybe 30 days may be too short.
Because it's a question of just giving notice that I intend opposing, it would be fine. But you've got to give full parties, which nobody would be comfortable if you were to change later. I said, no, I made a mistake by saying I think the value of my property is X, Y, Z. I didn't have enough time to do a proper evaluation. Thanks, sir. Consider that.
Honorable Sultan, I like your preamble. It's a friendly suggestion. So if you are going to, because I wonder if you are going to say it's an unfriendly suggestion. You're going to ask.
No, I just want to add to that. We just like to hear the view. We have no proposal because there were quite a lot of submissions from the public hearings addressing specifically this, the time frames. While they discuss a person, although the committee takes a decision, it is always good to take the department on board, you know. So.
And first of all, we agree that we as we move towards finality, it would be useful to maybe even put up on a sort of map or something like that some sense of the process so that we can see it visually. Because one gets lost in clauses and subclauses and things like that, and we do want to make sure that it's a fair process, and we don't either drag it out unnecessarily for speculative other reasons, or alternatively create timelines which are unreasonable. At the moment, so let's think about, well, ask the committee, if the committee, but we are certainly in the business of listening to whatever proposals might come in that respect. But the point that we want to make at this point is that remember that the preferred option is not expropriation, that there's an agreement between the parties, and which is a quick, from all sides, it's a quicker and easier process. Expropriation only kicks in when there's an unwilling seller or a hard-nosed buyer or whatever, unreasonable buyer. The timelines also need to bear that in mind, that there will be processes, none of the particular timelines necessarily come out of the blue, and that would be useful maybe to have a map. So that's a general comment for them, but maybe some kind of visual display would be useful. So something we'll undertake to produce a kind of PowerPoint diagram, so that we, beginning with the definition, have a better idea of the process timelines and how reasonable or otherwise they are. Because when we take them out of in isolation and we look at a 20 day or something, which in fact this would be a month, it might seem unreasonable. But if you see it in context, it may or may not be more reasonable. Okay, sorry, that's long winded. Without going into detail at this point, remember the timeline issue also comes into play around the difference between ownership and possession. And that's the point that was raised by a number of inputs. I think particularly the Will Wentzel lawyer made this point. That, and Sopoa also made the point, that we need to be careful that ownership comes, once there's a notice of expropriation, the expropriating party take ownership, but might not take possession. Okay, for a variety of reasons. And if that drags on for too long, it could leave an expropriated party in a limbo situation, for instance. The same applies also with the a notice of intention to expropriate, and a long delay between that and an actual notice of expropriation. And so you can have properties that are in limbo, frozen, which no one wants to touch as a result of, well, people know that the airport is coming or whatever. So we need to think about that and how it's a complicated area, whether we want to put timelines and so on. So we are taking advice on that. But the committee also obviously needs to think about those time issues as well and implications. And it is complicated because it cuts several ways. Both the expropriator and the expropriatee can be disadvantaged by too extensive timelines or too short timelines. But we'll be able to close to the tire when we perhaps next week. But I think we're looking at certainly next week at the earliest, where we can have the state law advisor, parliamentary law advisor, to assist us with some of the drafting that we would like them to assist us with, and so on. Okay. So that's a general observation about timelines and processes. And this bill is all about that. It's all about process. Okay. Under words, Tony?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I was just checking with the Deputy Minister on clause 4B, if the property is land. If the property is land, full particulars of all improvements thereon, which is the opinion of such owners or holders of rights, affect the value of the land. The intake of the department on that one, because you see, we are talking about the properties, because if you check the definition, there is no definition of properties.
You are done. One more minute.
We're dealing with 7 sub 4 B, and the question is, which reads as one of us has already said, the property is land, full particulars, all improvements thereon, etc.
Okay. Now bear in mind, again, that's where it would be useful almost to have a flow code diagram or something, that already from the side of the expropriating party, the valuer will have done a valuation and an indication of how, from the state side, the landed property and the land is valued, including capital improvements and so on, according to the information in the position of the valuer. So this is an opportunity for the party that is targeted for expropriation to comment and to say you've missed this or whatever. They're unlikely to say you added too many things. you've forgotten this, or I did this borehole or whatever. Okay, so it's an opportunity. So it's not out of the blue again. It's an interaction between an interaction of the party about to be expropriated with effective information provided by the state through its value. Okay. Now particularly getting lost a bit in detail. So if I can, B3,
detailed stuff, but which I don't think at this point is detailed, where we're saying we heard what they've said, but we think that notwithstanding what they've said, we're sympathetic or whatever, but it's a lot of detail which is irrelevant to what we're trying to achieve. So hence, I'm just trying to check with my advisors as to what would be most useful as the next point we should address.
Please consult the Deputy Minister, and when you are ready, you will give us your rejoinder. And members are doing the same.
I was just going to say to the Deputy Minister, should realize that he is under no obligation to follow the advice of the other advisor.
Honorable Fulton, your friendly advice is distracting.
As an advisor. Wanted to get into a whole lot of detail about the Geomatics Institute and so on, and explain why we like what they said, but we think it's not very useful. I think it won't be very useful to us as well. But when we get to talk about those members, I'm sure the Honourable Fultani has in detail the SA Geomatics Institute input, and will be useful for us in that respect. Okay, but
sorry, the same question that I asked earlier. You now want to jump to 14. The 9, 10, 11, 12, there were lots of inputs from the various institutions that made input on those clauses or sections. Is the minister coming back to them, or is he just going to not give any comment at this stage at all? They were actually very important issues.
We hear what they might be, and then we might at this point not have a response. But that's what it would be through you, Chairperson, would be useful if, as we jump to this, because we're trying to, as it were, hop to issues where we think it's easy to, where we're agreeing that we need to change it, or we're saying, trying to tell it why we think we're not. But it's along the way, because we've got quite a lot of detail here. It's along the way members would like to hear what our reaction is to something in line and so on.
I was going to say, Honourable Treyer, if you could recap some of those points. And then, Deputy Minister, see the issue of having passed what you said is detailed information on the geometric cells. Now that seemed as you not having said anything about that. So it might be advisable just to say that in regard to this, this is what we feel, but we do not feel that we should include it or we include X, Y, and Z. This is a brief comment. Then if we should cover some of those clauses. Honorable Kronewald, did I see your hand up?
Okay, Mr. Chair, yes. Notice of expropriation. There were a lot of proposals, especially from Weber Wenzel, and I think it refers to the date and the timeline which you have made a comment. And then 9, the vesting position. That was in contentions 1, and there was a lot of discussion and input, and with also specifically when compensation must be paid, at what date. And there was a strong proposal that the compensation must be paid on the date of possession. You can't expect people to move off their property or to hand over possession unless they've been paid. Because they've got to incur costs or get alternative accommodation. And there was also referral in this section to the effigy judgment. So that's what I wanted to ask. I thought this was quite an important one where lots of comments, we received lots of comments, making a possession of expropriated property. I'd like to know the Deputy Minister's view there.
Honourable Fulton.
Also on the clause 8, the
House of Traditional Leaders, as well as the traditional leaders themselves, expressed themselves very much in favor of a process which is involved. And I'm raising this because when you actually implement the bill, once it becomes an act, you're going to be looking at them face to face. So we would like, just for the good of smooth running of the administration, post the passing of the bill to an act, would like to get a comment, you know, on how you feel about that, because that is an anticipated problem. They expressed themselves very strongly for them on the last day.
Okay. In regard to the compensation issue that comes up later, as the Honourable Dre was raising, if you want me to, we can go a considerable length through the geomatics thing, and perhaps what we can do is make available the document without prejudice, as it were. In other words, it's not a commitment. So you will see further things. The summit is stuff where we're still looking for advice, okay? So a lot of that relates to the weather wind issues around the timeline. Whether up front there should be an indication in a notice of intention to expropriate, whether there should be in that notice an indication of the date. For instance, that was one of the arguments. And we're not sure what our view on that would be. But we'll be sure once we've taken full advice, because we're going to see pros and cons of wanting to do that. And we hear the issue that Weber Winslow is raising. On geomatics, okay, which I think that's, I'm sorry, Mr. Opening point that you're making, you said?
Sorry, probably traditional leaders wanting to be involved in the process now.
Okay. Okay, let me just set aside for that. We both had the time of the hearing and with the traditional leadership, and we also had less earlier with the House of Traditional Leaders as well, in the previous administration, but basically on the same bill. Basically, they would be consulted insofar as they would be an affected party. They would be included in eight. We don't think there's any necessity in, as it were, listing traditional leaders. But insofar as the properties under communal land tenure, for instance, they would naturally be part of the affected and consulted parties. Okay? But again, my colleague from the Eastern, I mean, we can see whether there's a need to include a reference or the committee in the sound group. Because I think the concern that we maybe hadn't listened to our colleagues from the SA Geomatics Institute. Colleagues will remember that, for instance, they wanted us to include a great deal of detail around the surveying process and so forth. For instance, they had a proposal under 8.4b that we should reword subsection B and C to read as follows. The case where the expropriation applies to a portion of a land parcel, a survey diagram, which diagram is suitable to be approved by a surveyor general, showing position of that portion of land, etc., etc. Quite a lot of detail, okay. We checked on other pieces of legislation, and specifically the Land Survey Act and the Deeds Registry Act of 1937, and in our view, they adequately cover those details. So there's no need to, in a law general application, to receive some of that detail. It's covered already.
That's the view of our legal advisor.
But we could, for instance, cross-reference, if the committee would like to see that, a cross-reference in Clause 9, for instance, the Land Survey Act and the Deeds Registry Act as well, for clarity.
Legal advisors, I want to make sure that you earn your money this morning. Your legal opinions.
Thank you, Sir President. I agree with the Deputy Minister. For an example, a provision of similar nature is in another legislation. You don't have to import it to the current legislation. But if you want to emphasize it, you can cross-reference to that particular legislation. Thank you.
That's the one opinion. What are the other? You say that lawyers have got many hands. They say on the one hand or the other hand. Let's hear the other hand.
I don't want to be pushing it wrong, but the problem is that every the value act, and these people at the act, in terms of the act, their duties, their functions are described in those acts. It's not necessary. If you do that, well, acts would be very voluminous. So it's really not necessary to be. It is explicit that when they do these things, they must do in terms of the act that regulates them.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to prove that you are at work. good book. May I suggest that we take a 10-minute break for tea? Or 15 minutes rather, we'll be back at 10:11. There is tea and coffee at the back. It's still quite warm, so if we can deal with that. And then reconsider what we are going to. So I see it's a cross-party affiliation. I'll have to find out from whom you obtained permission. Go and watch cricket and rugby whilst the rest of us will be slaving. Yes. We are ready. Shall we proceed? Good talk. Thank you.
Where we are in our sort of broad jumping, you know, from what we think are core issues, we're now on clause 12, which is the vested issue of compensation, which the Honourable Foucault is very happy. Okay. So the basically numbers of the inputs wanted us to provide more. We've been very cautious in terms of what needs to be taken into account when it comes to compensation. We've simply repeated what is in the Bill of Rights, bearing in mind always that this is a general law of application and not specific guidance in specific cases of expropriation. Okay. So there was some push for us to become more detailed, and we would like to resist that, but again, that would be for the committee to decide, obviously. There was also numbers of quite detailed inputs about how one might approach to determine compensation, what factors to bear in mind, and so forth. And again, we would advise resisting that in a general law application. And leave it to perhaps the Office of the Valuer General, which might offer guidance to an expropriating authority in the state as to how compensation, and to jurisprudence, and there's obviously extensive jurisprudence in the area of compensation and determining. So rather than in the general application, so essentially what we are wanting to hold on to what we've got, and we are not
from outside proactively making any further changes to 12, to clause 12. The other issue that came up, which is related, is the issue of Slanagelt or Salatium, okay, which exists in the 1975 Expropriation Act. Our view, Chairperson, is that speaks of financial loss and taking that into account. We think that, first of all, potential loss is not just financial. I think that was made, a point was made. I mean, a poor community where a dam is going to be located will lose their housing, and simply compensating them in cash might be not just an equitable, and might actually, because they might not be able to, first of all, the value of the harvest might not be that great, and they might not be able to easily obtain alternative accommodation, simply with a cash payout. So we prefer not to get into all of that detail, and we think that the just and equitable requirement in a general law application is adequate, is the correct broad guide, and would account for that. So in short, we would like to hold on to clause 12. As is, and that's the motivation. Just to additionally point out that apparently Salatium is fixed and has been for some time at 55,000 maximum of, okay. So the Tronicale doesn't amount to very much in any case, but that's an aside. Okay, so that opposition on the compensation. Compensation, what things must be taken into account?
Before that, Deputy Minister, Samyans, Honourable Punavat, followed by Honourable Sultan, and I'm not sure if Honourable Reyes, did you raise your hands?
Thank you,
Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. Can I hear what the Deputy Minister said about Salatium? We know there's a restriction. I'd just like to hear the view from the department that I'm very worried about it. It's the fact that I think it was the South African Bank Association who made an input. And they've used an example to make it simple that there's a mortgage bond, say for $4 million on a property. Now there's expropriation. The amount paid in the end is say $3 million. And there's $1 million outstanding, but then the owner is still liable for that. Whereas we have a situation, for instance, a farmer. If he or she farms, he's got this bond, which is normally according to market value, and now the expropriation, if the farmer was left to continue with the farming activity, so over 10 years period, they would have released the bond. But now because of expropriation, that owner is taken out of the profession, cannot pay it, and actually going bankrupt. How are we going to deal with that? Because that's a very unjust situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Member, the next was Honourable Sultani, and then it will be you, sir. Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know what wisdom would have persuaded the department to hold back its comments on such a tricky clause in the bill. But we will hopefully not be able to persuade them to think differently. There must be reasons. This one hung up on standing off like that, Chair, is because this is where the wrath of the whole process is going to affect the individuals. Just to cite a few, I'll start with the example that Honorable Honorable has come up with and say, maybe in cases where there is a bond involved, the notice for expropriation should be longer. The reason being that in so doing, one would be giving the owner of the property time to try to sell himself. Because if you just follow the normal timelines of the expropriation process, you are deliberately that's how the people see it. Putting the owner potentially in a worse sort of situation in the event that the settlement amount is far less than the bond still owed. But the fact that it is voluntary sales, and you would normally need, the FHHS will tell you, about 3 months to be able to get a buyer. After 3 months, the market begins, you know, to cool down. Then you would have given yourself, that is as the owner, time to get a fair compensation for your property. So the first thing that I would, you know, when please the department you know, should have applied this mind on. I'll still carry on with this kind of proposal even when it's delivered as a committee. And I think it makes sense. The second thing is there was this issue that was raised about putting a community as such in the same, more or less the same condition in which they were before expropriation taking place. You were so right, Honorable Deputy Minister, when you said that monetary compensation may not necessarily be the appropriate thing, you know, in the first place. And I had thought and hoped, honestly, that you would put that as a proposal as a department to say, when you're dealing with communities, that should be the guiding principle. Place a gem with that, put it that way. Just as an example, you know. And make sure that the community, because they have got, you find that in such cases, you're dealing with people who just do not have the wherewithal. Just for them to form a steering committee, they need an outside party to say this is where we want to go, in order to make sure that we don't lose out in terms of our social life. And lastly, Chair, even when it comes now to individuals, you know, my take is that there was an issue of the banks suggesting strongly that the market value should be considered. I thought you would want to respond to that, and there's a counter, you know, to that. And I thought the department would honestly feel challenged and or rather encouraged, you know, to say this is how we feel on this. But if you want to leave it in our hands, you know, you are the people who will administer this at the end of the day. So when you hit bottles, you know, when the implementation, remember that we encourage you to express yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Wonderful workers.
Thanks, Chair. I don't have a lot to add. I just think one must also take into consideration the nature of debt and how it differs from sector to sector. I don't think it's quite a simple determination. I think, to take agriculture, for example, it relies on a short-term debt, and if the process that the Minister was referring to is not clear there, then frankly, small delays can have a huge impact on compensation, the value of land. So I think that is a section that we have to buy ourselves to as a committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Your time, Madam Dreyer.
Mr. Chair, yes, I was actually quite surprised to hear that the Deputy Minister said they've got no further comments on that, or they're not accepting any of the proposals that were made, because this one, compensation for expropriation and the determination thereof, actually goes, is a crucial part of this bill. I mean, no one really wants to be a very expropriated. Sometimes it's necessary, and sometimes people, owners of whatever kind of property or rights, holders of rights, can see the necessity, but then at least you should be compensated properly and adequately for that loss, which is often more than just financial loss, as the Minister pointed out, a sense of community life, emotional, it's not just a home, sometimes it could be a way of earning a living, it's also your business. If you think about agriculture, it's not just where you live, it's also your business. There are a lot of other factors, and I think compensation is absolutely crucial, and people then have to relocate and re-establish themselves somewhere else. And that must be taken into consideration. There are bonds and mortgage loans often on property. People must pay off their bonds. So this is a very, very important part of the legislation. So we must look at things like the market value, which is very important. If you're losing your property here, you want to maybe replace it somewhere else. You're operating in the same market. If you don't get market-related compensation for this property, how are you going to afford a property somewhere else in the same market? So I would really urge the minister to go and look at that again and maybe come back with some comments on this crucial section.
Thank you very much, member. I rejoined from the department. My apologies, Honorable Mayor Mathieu.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to say, as we'll be looking into the issue of the bonds, we must also maybe consider how long the bond was taken. Maybe we should also take that one into consideration, because it might also lead to some abuse of some sort. What if a person rushed for a bond knowing that it was going to give them more time for them to be appropriated? So we should also look into that one as well, dealing with this issue.
Thank you, Honorable Member. The Department van Openbare Saak.
Okay. To repeat the litany or the mantra that we are reciting, this is the law of general application. Okay, I think that's the first thing that we... So all of the issues that the members are raising, we've got lots to say about them, but how to put that into legislation in a way that is responsible and effective is the challenge that you've got and we've got together with each other. So of course, it's terribly sympathetic to the farmer that Honorable Kunabob, I can't speak for the EFF, but the rest of us are being sensitive to, are concerned about that issue and all of the other issues of communities, move of dams, etc., etc. How do we put that into legislation is the challenge we've got. As politicians, we all, and with elections coming up, and we all want to express sympathy for all of these issues, and many of us do so genuinely. Okay. And that we all do. So the challenge we've got is a legislative, a constitutional challenge. Okay, so let's just hold on to that. So the fundamental point that we want to make is that we, one, let us trust in our courts. Okay, because a lot of this is going to be in the domain of courts rather than in legislation. And let us trust in the critical requirement of the Constitution that compensation must be just and equitable. So many of the examples of nasty things that could happen would surely be found by any reasonable court to be unjust and inequitable. A community that gets shifted arbitrarily or through the legal process of expropriation and gets dumped somewhere with a bit of money compensation and unable to reestablish his life, then it's got to be unjust and inequitable, sure. Now, of course, the further issue which we'll come to later is, but will they be able to get to court? And that's why we're saying on compensation, there must be a proactive, so that's the guidance we give. Any expropriating authority mustn't leave it up to some poor community then to try and find their way into a high court or whatever to challenge an unjust and inequitable compensation. That must be put to the head proactively by an expropriating authority. So it's not left to the high and dry. Okay. So then just to become a little bit more specific, in the case of a bond, a mortgage bond, okay, once expropriation has happened, that mortgage bond is, what is the word?
Released.
Is released. So over. There might be arrears on interest. Okay, that could be an issue where there could be a problem. There might be arrears on interest. But once the expropriation has happened, there is no more mortgage bond, and the farmer, if it's the farmer, and the bank, depending on the different quantums, would have to be compensated. Okay, in terms of the legislation. So the compensation, what the farmer has paid already for the farm, in terms of payments and so on,
that would have to be included in the compensation, but an outstanding amount from the side of the bank would also have to be compensated. However, even that would need to be in the hands of a court if it came to a court judgment. And there are cases of reckless lending by the banks, and they can't be compensated for reckless lending. Okay. And therefore, the onus would be on bank. They need to bear in mind that could be the case. Okay. On the time to sell, let's think of process. First of all, property that is targeted for expropriation, okay, it's going to be very difficult to sell. I can't imagine why someone would want to buy a property that is expropriated, other than to stipulate in the compensation specs, okay, the compensation might happen or something like that. It would be a peculiar thing. The time to sell issue, okay, comes in again into the process. So ideally, what you want is for the owner of the property to sell it to the state. Okay, so that process that precedes any expropriation. That's the appropriate time to sell. And that's the more useful time, beneficial time. But if you don't want to sell and you're getting into an expropriation process, then the safeguards are built into the process, general application for which I'm thinking. In regard to, sorry, I've forgotten the Honourable PA, the Observers Members, the name, Walters, I'm sorry, I'm getting very up the name, forget. Don't laugh. Market value is one of the criteria in the Bill of Rights, and therefore must be taken into account. But it's not the preeminent, necessarily, criteria in the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights advisedly has a list of five different criteria, which we dealt with in the Bill. I know that it's market value. But there are all kinds of other things that need to be taken into account, like the current use of the property, the history of the acquisition, and so on. And I think that those criteria also then cover the issues that Honourable Dre has raised. So, you know, what is the history of the property? It has a whole, perhaps historical and cultural value, and so on. And all of those things could be taken into account. Obviously, if it would have another version of the history of the acquisition of the property, that it was disposition. All of those things would need to be taken into account, and not just market value. So we think, in a general way, we're offering guidance, but at the end of the day, if there is disagreement, it's in the hands of the court to decide, based on the Constitution and based on the legislation, which follows the Constitution in this matter, to decide on what is the just and equitable thing. So that was a long speech to indicate that we are, it's not like we've got no comment, we've got no specific recommendation that we would like to propose in terms of changing what's here. But that's not a reflection of we don't care, we didn't hear all the issues that were raised at the time. We think we've covered in this general application, we've covered the concern in a general way, and that we must trust in the rules when it comes to this, if it comes to this. Hopefully most of these matters don't end up in court, because the expropriating authority wise enough to realize that it's an interest to make it a just and equitable compensation of it. Generally, expropriating authorities want the profit because they need to build a dam and it's not getting it, or the road, or whatever. So the court delays and things like that are not generally, we're not holding out an expropriating authority. We're not holding out and trying to prolong the thing in order to squeeze the minimum amount of compensation possible. Normally, we're paying a lot of money because the process is taking too long. But last point, you're also forgetting it. Last point is that the compensation we pay is public money, not our money. So we would also have a responsibility in that respect, not to spend R1 billion on Marlon Hart. Yes. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Because there's some. Okay.
So that's another responsibility. So not to be mini on compensation for it, as I'm saying. And critically, the interest of an expropriating authority is to move as quickly as possible. Ideally, to have a reset of willing buyer, I think, so that you move quickly. When you can't get there, you get into this expropriation process. You don't want the compensation challenges to go to court, or administrative justice challenges to go to court, which further delay the process. But if all of that happens, trust in the court, and hopefully in this legislation we're providing guidance along with the Constitution as to how the courts would judge. So in short, we would like to, but, you know, the more members can raise like concrete examples, have you really, the sort of thing that the Honourable Krunov has raised, are you really sure that you're covering that eventuality? But we do need to be sure that we are, and that people are not left high and dry, unfair. Thank you.
Deputy Minister, thanks. Let me have the legal advisor, then I'll give you the opportunity, Honourable Hussain. And did I see you and Honourable Kutnos? Madam, thank you.
Chairperson, what I wanted to add is if we look into the provision, that is the section that we're discussing, the clause that we're discussing, clause, I think when we unpack that section, for me, in light of the discussions that have ensued in respect of the circumstances, different circumstances like your bond and farming and all that, I think the part that talks about, before we get to the list, that says having regard to all relevant circumstances, including, for me, I think that would assist a lot. Because what that basically means in my interpretation would be, each case will be treated on its own merits, which means if there's a bond involved, that's a circumstance that needs to be taken into account. And the list, the list there is not a closed list, which means whatever is relevant will have to be taken into account. I think the intention of the draft was more along the lines of not limiting the list. Because if you list everything, then you leave other stuff out, then you might be sitting with a situation where in respect of the act or in respect of the constitution is left out. So I think that the provision is crafted in a way where you have to look in each and every circumstance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Friedan.
Thanks very much, Chair. Only reason I've lifted my hand, Chair, is because what is when the Deputy Minister keeps on saying, referring to courts, courts, courts? Because my assumption is that when you legislate such that the reasonable man should be able to interpret that, and I would include even valuers, rather than this apparent or implied over-reliance on courts. And I'm a little bit worried there, you know, where that he says we must clearly agree with our legal advisor that a piece of legislation that is very, very specific is not the best way to go, because obviously in the process you live on so much, you know. But I'm worried if at the back of his mind, because when it comes to interpreting a piece of legislation, a court might want to have the records to see exactly what did the legislator have at the back of his mind. And that's why I want to be on record as having raised an objection about the kind of approach. It's your piece of legislation, it's not ours. Why? We have to require any 10 parts that I agree, but it originates from you. So when the court would listen and say, no, the legislation was drafted in the manner to us so that we as courts would have the problem of trying to interpret it, then I'm concerned about that. Thanks.
Just a small the process of drafting legislation, obviously it has to emanate somewhere. In certain cases it might come from a particular department, in certain cases it might emanate from a member of parliament. Then we refine it through the portfolio committee process. The responsibility of the portfolio committee is to pilot it through parliament. Then at one stage it will go to plenary parliament, debate and it's passed. When that has happened, parliament has passed the legislation. It no longer belongs to the department. We as parliament, members of parliament, have exercised our responsibility to give effect to the final piece of legislation. It needs to be clear that it becomes our piece of legislation. After that, it's sent to the president's office for assent, and then he signs off on it, and it becomes the law of the land. So that process is important to just bear in mind. But today, it's on track water.
We're going to now jump to 21, clause 21, determination by court. And I apologize for referring to court again, Honourable Fulton. But that's what the clause is in. Just to confirm that we, in terms of 15.1 and 15.3 specifically, that we are recommending the proactive, where a dispute on compensation is not closed, that the onus will rest on the expropriating authority to proactively take the matter of compensation to court. Just to confirm that. Okay. We don't have drafting words yet, but by next week we are going to make a proposal for next week.
Mr. Chair, on that point, I'm glad that this is Mrs. 15 sub-law 3. Unless the expropriating authority and the claimant have agreed otherwise, the latter must be regarded as accepted the compensation offer made to him or her by the authority. If he or she fails to institute legal proceedings for the determination of the compensation before a certain date, it then says that the owners, it will be assumed that the owner has accepted that. So it puts the onus to go to court on the expropriated owner to institute legal proceedings. Now you're saying that you'll flip it around. So that will address my concern here on the 15 sub-laws 3. Okay, because that's the concern. We can't give the onus on the owner. It's too costly. Okay, and they already have the trauma of being expropriated. Okay. So you will give us a wording later on to replace that.
We can then jump to 21.1, and this is really just to pick up on the point that we made right at the beginning about the preamble and the South African Institute of Race Relations concern that that apart from a compensation issue, no other matter could be taken to the court. And so what we're suggesting is that we add under 21.1, subsection 1, does not preclude a person from approaching the court on any other matter relating to the application of this act. So that would be something like PAJA, Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, for instance. In other words, that is understood, and I think we originally had it in, and I think we got it from state law advice or somewhere, that it's redundant because it's obvious, but we think a little bit of redundancy on these critical issues is better than giving the impression that you can't take an expropriating authority on an expropriate matter in terms of administrative justice, because in fact this is all about trying to define an administratively just process of expropriation. Let me also find it specifically. So 21.1. Okay. Subsection 1 would remain essentially like it is, and then there would be a new subsection 2, which reads, subsection 1 does not preclude a person from approaching the court on any other matter relating to the application of the Act. And then we are knocking out all of the rest
under 21, under clause 21. All of that stuff, I think we've already indicated that we just cut that up, okay? And I'm not going to say why, because Sultani, well, Honourable Sultani will accuse me of leaving it to the court. So what the Weber Wenzel lawyer said correctly is that courts don't like you to determine in law to determine what how costs should be ordered and so forth. Court like that be within their purview. So but the Honourable Sultani didn't hear that, but that's the reason why we're
coming here then, Mr. Chairman. Take that the deputy minister delete everything from what point was that from C D? From 21-2. From sub 2, delete the whole of that. So only 21-1 stands. Yes. Just now this, on that point I'm happy with that, but to be praised by my concern was on 21 sub plus 2. So but that will be deleted and added.
Okay, then I'm sorry for now. Yes, thank you.
But we wanted to raise basically, there were a series of procedural issues, mainly from the SA Geomatics input. Things like the size of the placard notice should be in the legislation. Sorry, 24, clauses 24, clause 24 basically. Service and public, you know, which deals with service and publication of documents and the language to be used therein and so forth. Okay. So they came up with a lot of what we think were useful and obviously born out of their specific practical experience. But we think that the suggestions, like the size of the placard, stipulations around language to be used, apart from what is already officially required, et cetera, so there are a number of proposals they made under 24, which we think are best left unseen in law general allocation or written into regulation. Okay? So in short, we're explaining why we've heard them, but we think it's inappropriate to try in the legislation to describe a size of a placard. Okay? And I'm sure we have the support of the Honourable Sultani.
Honourable Grunewald.
Chairperson, I'm very worried to say that this issue on the placard, can you believe that Freedom Front Plus also agree with the Honourable Deputy Minister?
We would like that in writing. but please don't share it with us in front, lad. It could be very damaging to our reputation. And then there's one last matter, which also comes from Geomatics, if I'm not mistaken. And they were suggesting when it comes to an expropriation register, so remember in the legislation, something we didn't really discuss except they were the only ones who raised it, that what we're proposing in this legislation is that there would be an expropriation register, and that's clause 26 in DVR, which would be the information base for notices of intention to expropriate, actual notices of expropriation, and the details of what it is that's being expropriated. So the idea is that there's a single reference point. What the geomatics was suggesting is that it should be the Surveyor General's office, and we've interacted with that office and other offices, and we think the Surveyor General office is appropriate. They do cadastral surveys. We're dealing with all kinds of property heritage, so it would be inappropriate.
What we're suggesting in the legislation is that it would be the Department of Public Works to take the responsibility. An alternative could be the deeds registry. We'd approach them, but there's expense involved in this and are a bit overwhelmed as it is. So they're not going to be keen. So for the moment, we've taken note of what Geomatics was saying. We're planning to keep it as is. And load some more stuff onto the budget of the Department of Public Works and more responsibilities. We should add that Clause 32 talks about transitional arrangements and savings and understands that some of the stuff is not going to emerge fully formed once the bill is enacted. Obviously, some of these things, the more institutional things in particular, would take on time. So we put out our hands in the bill to be the keepers of a register of expropriations. Okay. I think people drag and let us off the hook, which I think is
interesting. No, not that easily. Sorry, I can't resist this temptation. Expropriation register. In principle, yes, good idea. I'm not disagreeing with the minister here. On practice, big problem. And, sorry, Jeremy, you know that's coming. The Public Works Committee, or the Public Works Department, does, to this date, still not have a complete and reliable asset register. And now they want to start another register. So it's, capacity, or, I mean, it's a great principle, but the implementation, the secret is in the implementation. Any idea, any proposal, any plan, any policy, any law, wonderful. But if you can't implement it, then it all falls flat. This is just comment, it's not against the bill, but I just had to say that.
Well,
thanks for the comment. But on the issue of why the public works register is not up to date even now, there are a number of reasons. The first portfolio committee I served on in 1994 was public works. And the challenge then was that because of the previous regime, dodging sanctions, and all other issues, there are a number of properties that were outside the country as internationally, that were not identified as South African properties, besides the embassies. You also had your TDGC, so-called states. So that ordered. So it took an inordinate time in order to try and find information. And in regard to a number of those properties, there wasn't a register. So that was the challenge. I have not served in public works for quite a number of years. I returned it now recently. But I doubt if there has been a reconciliation of all state properties up to this day. Internationally, also even locally, I doubt that. So this is a challenge that's there. It's true, 20 years or more hands, but it's an ongoing challenge that we have. Other people are sitting on those properties. If nobody can say prove that it's a state property, they just continue enjoying the fruits of those properties. Deputy Minister, that was my 2 cents in the collection plate.
Thank you. I was going to say that the National Department of Public Works Immovable Asset Register, since the time that the Honourable Drive was in this committee, but no connection to it, is now 99% up to date, okay? And obviously, the Immovable Assets Register is a moving target because assets are required, dispensed with, expropriated, or whatever. So it's moving, but it's 99%. But the state's immovable asset register, if you're talking about municipalities, provincial departments, and so on, that's not. So, for the reasons that you've said, Chairperson, it's been a tough order, but I must say that in
under the leadership of our current minister, there's been a very, very, and I think the other members of the committee have got regular reports in your absence, Honourable Dre. Regrettable absence, I should add. I think significant progress has been made, but we do take a point that adding this task now, and of course any register is only as complete as the information flows in from a variety of expropriating, all municipalities have expropriating powers and so forth. So the register will only be as effective as the ability for the reporting in to count and so forth. So it will certainly take time and will not be an uncostly challenge. But we've advisedly, from the Civic Affairs Department, we've kept today, having tried the deeds registry and not succeeding, asking them whether they didn't so. But we don't see this as a critical element. It would be a useful element if there was an effective expropriation register so that people who wanted to purchase property could find out whether it was earmarked, there was an intention to expropriate it and so on. So it would add clarity to the property market, amongst other things, and would be a useful public resource. But we don't think it's like an essential component of the bill. And again, so the committee can also, obviously, if there's a decision not to have a register or to look at it somewhere else, the committee can arrive.
Thanks. Honourable Sultani, followed by Honourable Kunavast.
Thank you, sir. This is not directly related to where we are, but I just thought it's an appropriate time for me to raise it. Would it not be prudent for us to have a clause here that prohibits the state from disposing of expropriated property until a certain period of time has expired? Just to be sure that this legislation will not easily be used to displace people, only to replace them with others. Saying this, given the fact that with the RDP houses, understand total of human settlement doesn't even give people any piece of paper, but just says to them verbally, you may not dispose of this RDP house for another 5 years. And that has arisen exactly because people would go into the RDP houses and then only to sell them, in the shortest possible time. So I think it would make sense to limit the state. Thanks.
The next was Honourable Grunewald.
Thank you, Chair. Now, my input, Chairperson, is that I think we must hit each other that if we are writing legislation and we are going to exclude certain responsibilities just because of certain incompetencies or problems in that specific department, we won't be able to write any legislation. If there's a problem, if that department has a responsibility and they don't do the job, they must get rid of the officials. I mean, we can't just go and say now we do something to another department. That's not acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Grunewald. The next was Honourable Walker.
Thank you, Sheikh. I'm just listening to Member Sultani. I'm not sure whether that's the right way to go about it. I understand the concern, and I think that's the kind of concern when even the committee comes discussing public interest and public purpose. I think that's where we need to maybe tighten it up. If the purpose of expropriation is clarified, set in stone in a sense, and it's aligned to a clear project by the state, then I think it helps the mechanism to prevent the situation that he's referring to. But I think that's something we must pick up with that particular debate. Thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Rale Buhantak. Happy Minister.
It doesn't have to be a back and forth, but that's what it's been this morning. We actually, interestingly, just in an earlier version, have a clause to that effect, and on legal advice, because of the complication, I mean, on advice, very difficult to administer. Obviously, it's covered once off, in that you have, in the notice of intention to expropriate, you have to say clearly what it is is the purpose for the expropriation. But if, you know, a year later, the expropriated property is put to some other use, which is a bit arbitrary, we weren't sure how to cover it, and we tried to, in a clause along the lines that you're suggesting. But the legal advice we got was that it was complicated. But okay, and I disagree with the Honourable Hunabot, he's right.
There's the Afrikaans word for that phenomenon, it's called too narrow. Getting closer.
Jefferson, I'm not really, it should be rarer than other. Good folks, that was the input that was from the department. What we are going to do, however, with the committee section and the quarterly committee content advice is to produce a report in regard to the submissions that were made by the general public and the comments made by members of the portfolio committee. That particular report we hope to circulate later this afternoon, so that when we reconvene tomorrow, you would have had the benefit of looking at that report, and the department should also be ready to come tomorrow with a report that more clearly articulates their position and also the roadmap that the Deputy Minister spoke about earlier. So this is how far it is we can traverse down this road today. But have your hand up, Honorable Susan. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. I was waiting with bated breath that would come to close to the service, which I found very, very, I want to say offensive, but challenging. 27. Okay, post 27 is about offenses. When a person doesn't comply with the administrative, legally based as it is, with an administrative process, why criminalize that? Say, this is around the notices where a person, the potential expropriatee, is given notices and has a right rather than a duty to respond. And if a person exercises their right and they just keep quiet and not comply, why criminalize their failure to respond? What was meant is the criminalization. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Just to say that we will also from our side get a cleaned up version of the document that we were talking to, as well as the flow diagram that we've agreed to produce. We might get to members also in the course of the afternoon, so that you will have a chance to refer to it when we get to it tomorrow. And Chipperson, it might be useful if we can begin then in a provisional way, not in the final way obviously, to go clause by clause tomorrow, so that we've got two documents that might be you know, rather than hop around a little bit like as we've been doing today. But that's obviously a proposal that you might consider.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Honourable Walters, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to support the concern raised by Member Fultani. I think it is something that needs to be rethought. There's a big difference between criminalising somebody ignoring, say, a court order, which is a standard, call it something standard in legislation, another thing to criminalise administrative process, and I think that's something we definitely need to look at. Thanks.
Thank
you. That's awesome. It's not too northern, but I do like with the Member Fultani's thinking. Thanks.
There's nothing wrong with two-nothing. Facts are facts and facts are stubborn. If there's logic and merit in them, it's in order. Thanks. The point has, however, been noted, but also consider too that when we meet, this will be one of the issues that we do discuss. Ladies and gentlemen, may thank you. We'll reconvene tomorrow. You know the venue. I'm told that the same venue is 9:30. Yeah.